George Kontos, thank you so much for joining us today, George. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you on. Thank you for joining us. Let's get into a topic that we've been kicking around, and then we'll bring in all the other stuff. I don't want to ask you, the guy who's sitting in a studio now or wherever you're doing the show from, since we're not allowed in studios, but I don't want to ask studio George Kontos. I want to ask on the bump George Kontos. Would you want defensive shifts galore behind you? Yes or no?
Well, the honest answer is no. And just to add on to your initial intro, I still feel like I'm pitcher George Kontos in the studio. So that's a good thing, I guess. But as far as the shifts, I think the shifts need to be pitcher specific. And I'm sure they are somewhat, but I was always a guy who I had a pretty big, deep repertoire. I would move the ball around. I didn't rely on just high velocity, trying to blow it by guys and just try to beat them with high octane stuff. I would throw cutters back door. I would throw two seams. The exact play that we saw, in the sixth inning of last night with Johnny, where Brandon was shifted to the second base side of the field, and then he threw a really, really nice pitch, well executed two seam, and the result was exactly what in his mind I think he was expecting. He missed the barrel of the bat, got a weak ground ball to shortstop, and there was nobody there. So I'm a kind of guy where I'm not a big fan of the shift. I think the shift should not be extreme or put on at all with guys who have movement to both sides of the plate.
And the shift is not something that you dealt with much in your career. It wasn't really in vogue or in fashion then. Bochy, I don't think, shifted anything but a few gears driving to the ballpark.
Well, no, my last couple of years, 16, 15, 16, 17 with the Giants, we were implementing some of the shifts. That's when it kind of started to make its big, big ovation into the game. And I remember I had a play literally in Colorado, very similar to what happened to Johnny last night, except that I was facing Daniel Descalzo. I threw him a two-seam fastball down and away, got a routine four-hopper to shortstop, and the coaching staff had shifted Panic into the big time hole and Crawford to the second base side of the bag. And same thing happened. I gave up a routine little ground ball single that should have been out. And the next batter, which luckily for me, Charlie Blackman, only hit it to the right field wall and not over it. Unfortunately, Johnny didn't have that same luck. But I think the shift just needs to be amplified or managed differently for every person on the mound.
That said, how much do you lose as a pitcher like you were when they put on a shift? Because they're not going to all of a sudden shift for the pitch. They're going to stay where they are. How much of your repertoire how much repertoire does a guy who works both sides of the plate lose by having to pitch to a shift that's already static in there?
Well, just to give you an example, my cutter, just to use this pitch, my cutter, when I threw it inside to a lefty, it didn't have lateral movement. It had vertical. So it was more like a hard split when I threw it inside to a lefty. When I threw it back door, it would have more lateral movement. So my cutter was never really used to throw inside on the hands to lefties. But when I was facing a lefty that was shiftable, they would still shift. And then what would happen was I'd throw a backdoor one, and there would be no one at shortstop, where a lefty would typically hit a backdoor cutter off me. So I think that you're always supposed to pitch to your strength. That should never change. The one thing that I did hear Johnny say in his post-game interview is that he didn't really check where the defense was. I have to fault myself for not really doing that as often as I probably should have with guys on base, knowing where Brandon Crawford was or Panic was or whatever. But ultimately, being the pitcher, you're the guy in control. Everything moves off of you. So you have to be comfortable with whatever's going on, and you still have to pitch to your strength. So if you're going to pitch to your strength, get an outcome that you want, and then there's nobody there, a conversation has to be had somewhere so you can try and rectify that situation.
So I guess the conversation is sort of where I want to attack this from. I feel like someone must have told Johnny Cueto at some point that this is a team that likes to employ a lot of shifts. And then is it his responsibility to check that? And or are maybe we seeing sort of a bit of a push and pull between a veteran player and a young in the game manager where they're sort of fighting about this?
Yeah, I mean, but ultimately, if I'm Johnny Cueto, if I'm a guy who has 13 years in the big leagues, I'm the ace of this staff, I'm the guy who's expected to go out there every fifth day and give our team the best chance to win out of our five starters, I would go in and I would have a conversation. I'd say, hey, look, we have to either shift less when I'm on the mound, or let's try a game where we don't shift at all and see what happens. Because if he's going to go out there and be frustrated and maybe not have confidence in his defense or change the way Johnny pitches, that's not what you want either. But you have to be vocal and you have to be proactive about making sure everybody is in the spot where you want. And to credit the fielders, it's not just the coaches, whoever's in the dugout saying, let's shift here. Brandon Crawford, I know, has free reign. He's a very smart shortstop. He moves with who's up to bat and who's on the mound. He's very good at pretty much being in the general area of where he thinks the ground ball will go. Sometimes he's overruled, and the coaches will be like, look, move further over. But for the most part, it's an effort for everybody. I'd say the middle infielders, the coaching staff, and the pitcher, Johnny, for example, need to sit down and be like, look, we need to get something going because I can't keep getting beat this way.
George Contos joining us here. You can see him tonight, Giants pre and post game live on NBC Sports Bay Area. How much are you missing your career? You've officially been away from it long enough now to where that itch might be starting to bug you a little bit. It's so funny. We've said that, you know, Buster Posey is so taken for granted that in his absence, you start missing him. There was a point there where it was like everyday Contos, man. You were as dependable as the day was long. How much are you missing this game now that you don't get to be a guy walking to the hill almost once every other day?
Well, you know, it's funny. I trained this offseason to potentially play, and I was throwing in front of scouts. My stuff had gotten to the point where I thought it was the best that it had ever been. I was throwing, you know, 90, 92 in bullpens, which I had never thrown that hard prior to being in a live game before. And then once I hadn't signed by the day spring training started, I had told myself that that was going to be it. I had reached out to Devin Fox and the NBC Sports Bay Area crew, and I was like, is this an opportunity still? Because we had talked about it all my years playing in San Francisco, and they're like, yes, we would love to have you. And then the pandemic hit, and while it's terrible and it's kind of thrown everything upside down, the one good thing for me at least is it had given me some time to just step away and forget about baseball for a few months. And then I even got to missing it. You start seeing some of the Korean baseball that was on, and you start getting the itch again. So right now, not being in studio, not having to go to the ballpark, it's been a little bit easier even to cover it. I think I'm going to have a hard time when, you know, maybe next year when I'm in San Francisco, walk in to cover a game and I walk onto the field and I can't go right in between the white lines. That's going to be a little bit difficult, and I'm sure I've already prepared myself for the emotions that will come with watching a game live and not being able to play. But, you know, the one thing that I can say is I always prepared, I always worked hard, I always left it on the field. So I can look in the mirror and say that I'm very content and happy with how I left everything off. So do I miss it? Absolutely. Is it something that was a huge chapter of my life? Yes. But this next chapter I'm very much looking forward to as well.
Well, and you're off to a very good start. Just curious, what do you think put some life on your fastball that you might not have had as you were tinkering going into this year?
Well, what it was is I sat down and I kind of broke down my delivery from the ground up, and I started buying into some of the, you know, kinetic energy transferring stuff, a lot of the things that you see Trevor Bauer and guys like that. Not necessarily the weighted ball stuff. While I did have a weighted ball routine that I would do, I think the most that I got out of it was just kind of getting all the checkpoints in my delivery working together again. I was a guy who kind of would build up some momentum, and I would leak a little bit off the mound. And what that would do is it not let me use all of the strength and power that my legs create. And what I did this year was I tried to make sure my feet were grounded and create a little bit more hip-shoulder separation. I'm sure you guys by now have heard what that means, is when your front foot lands, your hips are open, but your shoulders are still closed, and then that torque is what brings all the velocity and spin rate and all that. So I had broke it down to the level of, okay, this is what I need to do, this is what I'm doing. I would do drills to try and get it back to where I thought it needed to be, and I made some pretty good strides. Unfortunately, I was 34 years old, and I wasn't pumping 95 in those bullpens, even though I think that 95 was in the tank this year. I've never been a guy that's that overpowering velocity. I've just been a guy that could go out there, throw strikes, throw breaking balls behind the count, and ultimately, and in my opinion, most importantly, get outs.
Yeah, they call that pitching where I'm from, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you got some mechanical things squared away, and had you been on this team, it might have been your first Giants team that has a ton of offense and needs pitching. And it's never been, it sort of never was that way in any of the other years you were there. But what I want to ask is, having spent all that time, do you suddenly have either a different regard for or an interest in becoming a pitching coach?
Oh, that's a good question. I've thought about that a lot. I think that I would love to work with players. The thing that I don't know that I would really enjoy doing is going back to the grind of the minor leagues. I totally think that I could do a pitching coach or a bullpen pitching coach role. But those minor leagues, traveling on buses and going from hot city to hot city in the Sally League and those really, really hot places, it's just not something that really sounds fantastic to me. But somewhere down the line, could that change? Sure. But I think I would totally like to work with pitchers and maybe one day do a pitching coach position at the big league level.
This is a weird question to ask a guy who played for Bruce Bochy as long as you did. But perhaps other places in your baseball life you can speak to when you might lose some confidence in a manager. Because I honestly, I don't think we know anything really about Gabe Kapler yet. But he has made a couple of mistakes and had a couple apparent breakdowns in communication that make me wonder if there are guys in that clubhouse saying, I'm not a huge fan of this guy. What are the sort of things that lead players to feel that way?
Well, first of all, from the things that I've heard so far about from the clubhouse and in interviews from the guys in there, they love Gabe. They think that he's a great players manager. His communication is great with them. And the tough part is he stepped into a very difficult position being the replacement to a guy who's going into the Hall of Fame and who brought three World Series rings to the city of San Francisco. I'm sure he's under a ton of pressure as well to follow in those footsteps, which are really not fillable. In the, 12 or 13 games, eleven games that they've played so far, it's too small of a sample size. But I mean, throughout the course of a full season, if there are still some of these lack of communications, I think the veteran guys who have been there, Longoria, Crawford, Belt, Hunter Pence, while they would never say so publicly, I think maybe internally you start to question some of the decisions that are maybe being made.
George, how much different was it for you to pitch to Buster Posey as your catcher as opposed to, Trevor Brown when he was backing up Posey?
Well, the thing that I can say is all the catchers that we had in San Francisco while I was playing there, from Buster to Hector Sanchez to Trevor Brown to Andrew Susek, they all were working with Buster on a daily basis. So they understood what went into being a catcher at that level. And Buster is obviously irreplaceable, but when you're following that lead, you tend to kind of jump into those shoes as well, and you learn very quickly. What I saw last night with Johnny and Trump was just some guys who hadn't had that many reps together. When Buster was back there calling the shots, I wasn't even thinking. I was almost on cruise control most of the time. And if I ever did shake, he knew exactly what fingers to throw down after. It was either a 3 for slider, or he'd give me the same pitch he just called because he had information from prior in the game where he knew that was the right pitch. And that's how I think you have your best outing, is when you're going out there and you're really not thinking all that much. It's just, it's flowing. You see the signs and you're going, and that's usually how I had my best outing.
That probably would have been helpful if they started to shift this year. So that's one more thing that Posey takes off the table by taking care of his family. Is there, as you look at this team, not just now but going forward, do you see a team that's already transitioning to the next era or one that's concluding the old one?
I think that I see a team that's definitely transitioning into a new era. You still have some guys that are there that are under contract, and over the past couple of years, there's been a lot of speculation. Is, you know, will Belt be traded? You know, what's going to happen with Buster? I think once Saves and Bobby Evans, once their time had kind of, you know, expired, and you brought in the new regime, so to speak, I think that was kind of the closing of the last chapter and the start of a new one moving forward.
As a former relief pitcher, I feel it's important to ask you, where's your head at on the runner on second base in extra innings?
I think it is, you know, that's not a good rule. This is Major League Baseball, you know. So when you get a little bit little league-ish, in my opinion, when you start with a guy on second to try and speed the games up. How often do you actually see games that go, you know, 14, 15 innings? It's not very rarely. You know, it's one of those things where we did it in the minor leagues in 2019, last year. I had pitched in the minor leagues in AAA with the Washington Nationals. And, you know, it's a little awkward when you go out to start a new inning and there's a guy on second base. It's almost, you know, like a pre-written, you bunt a guy over, then you see what happens and you try to get a run in. And then you could still have 13, 14 innings because both teams play it the same way unless somebody gets a clutch hit. So I'm not a huge fan of the runner on second rule. I think that the game of baseball was awesome the way it was, and it didn't really need this little extra change.
George, thank you so much for joining us, man. It was great to talk to you. Break a leg on these broadcasts. Root for your Northwestern Wildcats when we got some Big Ten football once again, if we get Big Ten football. And maybe Indiana can take you out. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.